Hello all, it is January the 3rd of 2025, and we're basking in the glow of just about minus 30 tonight, or right now at the moment, so good time to be inside the walls instead of outside of them. When we were finishing up part 8 of the False Christs and False Prophets series, I just ran out of time. For those who don't know, I must limit time to no more than about 52 minutes because the file size gets too big to send out this way. The next passage, or what I just got up to, was 1 Samuel 15. And we'd seen in the previous message when we looked in 1 Samuel 3 of how it was when it was time for Jehovah to begin working with Samuel for him to become a prophet in Israel. 1 Samuel 15 records a part of his responsibility and actions as a prophet to Israel. So let's pick up the story there. 1 Samuel 15. We're going to spend a lot of time in 1 Samuel today because I think there's a very important lesson there for us all. Samuel also said to Saul, "Jehovah sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore, heed the voice of the words of Jehovah. Thus says Jehovah of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when he came up from Egypt." So we learn here that the descendants of Amalek were picking away at Israel when they came out of Egypt, and somehow God noticed and hadn't really forgotten that they did. Well, when I read that, I thought, it says, and it's recorded, that vengeance is God's. So it would appear as though it's vengeance time. And it made me look up Deuteronomy 32, where that is actually recorded with regards to vengeance. Deuteronomy 32, verse 35. Tells us that vengeance is mine and recompense. Their foot shall slip in due time, the day of their calamity is at hand, and the things to come hasten upon them. Now we want to just focus on the first part of that. Or God is saying that vengeance is his, and if somebody needs to be recompensed, it'll be him that's doing it. We see that repeated in the New Testament, actually in a couple of places. Romans 12 is one of them. So let's look at that. Romans 12, verses 19 through 21. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. This same passage is mentioned for us in Hebrews 10, so I think it's important we look at that. Hebrews 10, verses 28 through 31. Hebrews 10, verse 28. Anyone who has rejected Moses' law dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. This is putting into context where we're at here. Of how much worse punishment do you suppose will he be thought worthy who has trampled the Son of God underfoot, counted the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified a common thing, didn't put any value in it, and insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know him who said, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. And again, the Lord, Jehovah, will judge his people. So, that's just an interesting background thought that we might want to just have in place as we roll ahead with this study. Does Jehovah, or can Jehovah, choose to use human instruments to accomplish his will when he feels it is time to do so. Well, let's go on in verse 3. Now go, the directive is to Israel, and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have, and do not spare them. But kill both man and woman, infant and nursing child, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. That's quite an assignment, if you will. Well, does he always have to do it that way? Does he always work through human instruments? And I think it becomes important for us to at least look at the spectrum of how God actually does things. And we've used this passage before where God doesn't always have to use people to do his bidding, but he does, as we just read in 1 Samuel. In Micah 1, verses 1 through 7, the word of Jehovah that came to Micah, so it's God speaking, "Hear all you peoples, listen, O earth, and all that is in it. Let the Lord God be a witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. For behold, Jehovah is coming out of his place. He will come down and tread on the high places of the earth. The mountains will melt under him, and the valleys will split like wax before the fire, like waters poured down a steep place. All this is for transgression of Jacob and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? And what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? Therefore I will make Samaria a heap of ruins in the field, places for planting a vineyard. I will pour down her stones into the valley, and I will uncover her foundations. All her carved images shall be beaten to pieces, and all her pay as a harlot shall be burned with a fire. All her idols I will lay desolate, for she gathered it from the pay of a harlot, and they shall return to the pay of a harlot." Sometimes God just takes matters into his own hands, and sometimes he works through people. And I think that's just a good thing to keep in mind of how he operates. What we want to do here is just carry on. So the instruction was fairly straightforward. So Saul gathered the people together, numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to a city of Amalek and lay in wait in the valley. Then Saul said to the Kenites, "Go, depart, get down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt." So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. So you can see here that God has a pretty good memory about who did what, and those who helped them were spared, and the ones who didn't help them took it a little rough. And Saul attacked the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is east of Egypt. He also took King Agag of the Amalekites alive and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them. But everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed. Now the word of Jehovah came to Samuel, saying, "I greatly regret that I have set up Saul as king, for he has turned back from following me." God gave him an instruction through his prophet, and he pulled back and shirked his responsibility, and God certainly noticed, and he brought it to the attention of his prophet. In God's eyes, Saul has not performed the commandments of God, as it says. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried out to Jehovah all night. So when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, this is very, very interesting. And he told Samuel, saying, "Saul went up to Carmel, and indeed he set up a monument for himself. And he has gone around, passed by, and gone down to Gilgal." Well, that's interesting. You can see him suddenly becoming more interested in himself than in doing the will of Jehovah. I can't say that I noticed that before, but there it is, large as life. Notice, when Samuel went to Saul, verse 13, Saul said to him, "Blessed are you of Jehovah, I have performed the commandment of the Lord." We see Saul lying here. Samuel knew what Saul's instructions were, and that he, Saul, had not fulfilled what he was asked. Let's go on to verse 20. Samuel said, he wasn't having any of the story, "What then is this, the bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?" And Saul said, "Well, they've brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep, the oxen, the sacrifice to Jehovah, your God." Notice he didn't say, "my God." "And the rest we have utterly destroyed." And you can see him then placing the blame for his disobedience on others. Well, isn't this starting to sound a whole bunch like the song and dance that went on in the garden? Let's go on. "Then Samuel said to Saul, 'Be quiet, and I will tell you what Jehovah said to me last night.' And he said to him, 'Speak on.' So Samuel said, 'When you were little in your own eyes, were you not head of the tribes of Israel, and did not Jehovah anoint you king? Now Jehovah sent you on a mission and said, "Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. Why then did you not obey the voice of Jehovah? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of Jehovah?'" Just not doing what Jehovah said is the problem. And Saul said to Samuel, "But I have obeyed the voice of Jehovah," lying again, "and gone on the mission in which Jehovah sent me, and brought back Agag, king of the Amalekites, and I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the plunder, sheep and oxen, the best of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice to Jehovah your God." Notice again, it's not Jehovah my God, in Gilgal. So, again, he's lying. And Samuel was having absolutely none of it. It's interesting to me to watch and see here how all of a sudden it's not his God, it's Samuel's God. You know, I don't have to obey, but, you know, it's his God, it's not my God. Starting to see this, and then it makes sense where he would make a monument of himself. Once Saul knew that the gig was up, and we'll see, find out why, let's go through verse 22. So Samuel, God's prophet, said, "Has Jehovah as great a delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of Jehovah? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion," which is where he was, "is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of Jehovah, he also has rejected you from being king." Once he was told that, and notice verse 24, "Then Saul said to Samuel, 'I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandments of Jehovah and your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice.'" Now that might be legitimate, but it also could easily be an excuse where he allowed the concerns of others to interfere with his vision about and to God directly. "Now therefore, please pardon my sin and return with me that I may worship Jehovah." But Samuel said to Saul, "I won't return with you, for you have rejected the word of Jehovah, and Jehovah has rejected you from being king over Israel." Notice how enthusiastic he was about hearing that. "And as Samuel turned around to go away, Saul seized the end of his robe, edge of his robe, and it tore. So Samuel said to him, Jehovah has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to a neighbor of yours. Notice he didn't identify him. Who is better than you? You see how it took. And let's go and just look at this. Also, the strength of Israel will not lie nor relent, for he is not a man, speaking of Jehovah, that he should relent. Then he said, I've sinned. Honor me now, please, before the elders of my people and before Israel, and return with me that I may worship the Lord your God. Same attitude, same issue. He acknowledged, but. You know, it's important for us to remember that as God is in the process of building his mind in the ecclesia, Satan is also busy building his mind in humans, if folks will in fact allow it. As I mentioned in verse 30, again, you can see it's well Jehovah, your God. If we go on, and what we want to do here is look in and concentrate on the evolution of Saul's mind and his transformation from where he was into the mind of Satan. It's the whole story is really about that. If we go on to 1 Samuel 16, then we'll pick up the story a little more. Now Jehovah said to Samuel, how long will you mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I'm sending you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons. And notice, and as Samuel said, how can I go? If Saul hears it, he'll kill me. So the situation was already a little tense, as you can well imagine. And Samuel knew of Saul's hostility, especially if he found out that God was going to anoint somebody else to replace him. And you read through the text, Lord said, take a heifer with you, say I've come to sacrifice to Jehovah. Like there's a cover story in place here. But you can see the hostility of Saul towards God's prophet. This should not surprise us, given that Jehovah's prophets put his commandments first, while the other side, the other spirit, would shun them. So we can see this creep happening into Saul as we go along. Through the ongoing communication that we see between Jehovah and his prophet, we can see that the prophet, in spite of the issue that Saul would kill him, he just went ahead and did what he was told, living by every word of Jehovah. In spite of the reigning king's likely reaction, Samuel did what he was told. If we go to verse 14 here, we see something that I think is very interesting. But the Spirit of Jehovah, Saul did have God's Holy Spirit. Ron Dart did a series or a sermon, I guess it was, some years back, outlining how God cleaned Saul up, gave him his spirit, started him out with a clean slate, and really polished him up to get on with the job that the people of Israel wanted. But here we find out that due to Saul's rebellion, after David had been anointed, if you look in verse 13, Samuel took the horn of oil, anointed him in the midst of his brothers, and the Spirit of Jehovah came upon David. From that day forward, Samuel arose and went to Ramah. But the Spirit of the Lord, Spirit of Jehovah, departed from Saul, and a distressing spirit from the Lord troubled him. Well, that's interesting. You know, did Saul have Jehovah's Holy Spirit? Well, yep. But when his replacement was chosen, long before David was actually ruling, Saul, having lost God's Spirit, was given someone from the other team just to, you know, cause some problems. And that's not a one-off. If we go to Judges 9 and verse 23, where we have it recorded here, and God sent a spirit of ill will between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. So, will God send, whether that's a literal spirit or an attitude adjustment, will he send a spirit to do his bidding when he wants that? Well, the answer is absolutely yes, he will. And we notice he did it with Saul, but does it stop there? Well, let's have a look at 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 through 9. God will do what he needs to do in his plan. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7. And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, and Paul was given a tremendous understanding, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. So here we have a case where we have God's, one of his own apostles, and God assigned a spirit of Satan, or a messenger of Satan, very likely a demonic personality, to keep Paul in check. So, you know, going on, verse 8, concerning this thing I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient to you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. So, you know, there's a bit of a spectrum of response here, and God will do, or have Christ do, exactly what they need in any particular situation. When one does not like to retain Jehovah in their knowledge, it opens a Pandora's box of potential problems. We have to be very careful with that. Well, if we go on to our reading here in Saul's story, realizing the problem, his counselors or whatever noticed a change. Going on verse 15, Saul's servant said to him, surely a distressing spirit from God is troubling you. It was so obvious they could see it. Let our master now command your servants who are before you to seek out a man who is a skillful player on the harp, and it shall be that he will play it with his hand when the distressing spirit from God is upon you, and you shall be well. Well, that's interesting. They realized the problem, and seeing Saul's demeanor change, they suggested a solution. How did they know that that was a solution? I have no idea. But it was. Saul thought it was a good idea, so let's read on in verses 20 through 23. And Jesse took a donkey loaded with bread, a skin of wine, a young goat, and sent him by his son David to Saul. Saul had requested that David come. So David came to Saul and stood before him. And notice, Saul loved him greatly. He didn't know that David had been anointed to replace him yet. And he loved him greatly. And he became his armor bearer. Then Saul said to Jesse, saying, please let David stand before me, for he has found favor in my sight. And so it was, whenever the Spirit from God was upon Saul, that David would take a harp and play it with his hand. Then Saul would become refreshed and well, and the distressing spirit would depart from him. So he's very likely been given some very direct and explicit instructions from God what he was to do. You know, it's not likely at this time that that Saul knew that David had been anointed to replace him. And we see some actual confirmation of that in First Samuel 17, verses 55 through 58. When Saul saw David was going against the Philistines, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I don't know." So the king said, "Inquire whose son this young man is." Then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" So David answered, "I'm the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." So, you know, we can see David standing here with Saul at the time. And I don't believe at that time that he knew that David was anointed to replace him. If we go on into 1 Samuel 18, let's read verses 1 through 9. When he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt. So David went out wherever Saul sent him and behaved wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war. And he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So you notice where Saul placed David. Now it happened as they were coming home from David, when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women had come out of the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tambourines, with joy, and musical instruments. So the women sang as they danced and said, "Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Oops, we just stepped over the line. Then Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him. And he said, "They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed only thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom?" So Saul eyed David from that day forward. We can see, if we look, the spirit of envy, which is the opposite of the spirit of love, now placed in Saul. Satan is building his mind out in King Saul. David's demotion is recorded. And we look at that, if we just go on, it happened on the next day that the distressing spirit from God came upon Saul and he prophesied inside the house. So David played music with his hand at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand. And Saul cast the spear, for he said, "I will pin David to the wall." He wanted to kill him. But David escaped his presence twice. Now Saul was afraid of David because Jehovah was with him, but he had departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from his presence and made him his captain over 1,000, where he was in charge of them all before, and he went out and came in before the people. You notice here that once envy, rather than love, was instilled in him, things started to go quite a bit worse. David was demoted. But the driver was the mental capacity or the mental disposition of Saul, which was given to envy. when he couldn't kill him, you know, he threw the spear at him. You notice in verse 17 that he's already plotting and scheming for the fix. Then Saul said to David in verse 17, "Here is my older daughter Merib. I'll give her to you as a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight Jehovah's battles." For Saul thought, "Let my hand not be against him, but the hand of the Philistines be against him." Already misrepresenting his thoughts. Notice verse 21. So Saul said, "I will give her to him that she may be a snare to him." Notice ill will instead of good will. "And that the hand of the Philistines may be against him." Then, therefore, Saul said to David a second time, "You shall be my son-in-law." His plotting and scheming was obvious. This is not of the Spirit of God. This is the spirit of Satan. You notice here the parallels when David was under the influence of the wrong spirit, that he did exactly the same kinds of things to Uriah and actually had Uriah killed. If we go down to verse 25, 1 Samuel 18, verse 20, Saul said, "Thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines." Can we see exactly the same spirit of Satan working in Saul as later happened to King David? I think it's obvious. If we go down to verse 29, "And Saul was still more afraid of David. So Saul became David's enemy continually." Satan would have known that Saul or David had been anointed to replace him as king. So Saul, working for the other side, stands in opposition to him. He's his enemy, and he wants to kill him. And he's awfully persistent, as we'll see. "Then the princes of the Philistines went out to war, and so it was that whenever they went out, that David behaved more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name became highly esteemed." It just kept getting worse. Let's go on to chapter 19. "Now Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants, that they should kill David." So now he's enlisting his own son, who loved David, to kill David. "But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted greatly in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, 'My father seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning and stay in a secret place and hide.'" Can we see the spirit of envy driving and motivating Saul? The more he goes to the dark side, the more control there is, and the more egregious his behavior becomes. Envy can lead to murder. There's a passage in the New Testament that basically shows us that, and many of you will know it, but let's just look at it quickly here in passing. If you go to Matthew 27, verse 17 and 18, it says, "Therefore, when they had gathered together, Pilate said to them, 'Who do you want to release me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus who's called Christ?' For he," Pilate, "knew that they had handed him over because of envy." It is a huge motivator of nastiness. And when we are driven by envy, we cannot show love. It is the very antithesis. We saw very similar things throughout the Bible. If you go to 1 John 3, and verse 12 is not as Cain, who was of the wicked one and murdered his brother. So we can see Saul wanting to do that. He was David was a fellow Israelite. And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brother's righteous. That spirit of envy is an incredibly powerful thing. And it is the basis for Satan's spirit towards Jehovah and his son. Going back into 1 Samuel, let's take a look at 1 Samuel 19, verses 9 through 11. And once we read this passage, remembering we see this continual debasing and continual becoming more and more evil in Saul. 1 Samuel 19, verses 9 through 11. Now, the distressing spirit, something we've looked at, from Jehovah came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand. And David was playing music with his hand. So, all of a sudden now we see David's playing his harp and the spirit is allowed at him. There is no longer any relief. Then Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear. But he slipped away from Saul's presence and he drove the spear into the wall. So David fled and escaped that night. Saul also sent messengers to David's house to watch him and to kill him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, "If you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." It was so obvious what was going on. 1 Samuel 20. Verses 27 through 33. And it happened the next day, the second day of the month, David's place was empty. This is at the time of, right around the time of the new moon. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, "Oh, why has the son of Jesse not come to eat, either yesterday or today?" So Jonathan answered Saul, "David earnestly asked permission of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, 'Please let me go, for our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. And now, if I've found favor in your eyes, please let me get away and see my brothers.' Therefore he has not come to the king's table." Then Saul's anger was aroused against Jonathan, against his own son. Anger is also a very powerful motivator. And he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you shall not be established nor your kingdom. Now therefore send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die." And Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to them, "Why should he be killed? What's he done?" Then Saul cast a spear at him, at his own son, to kill him, by which Jonathan knew that it was determined by his father to kill David. If we read this account as it goes along closely, we can see Satan's mind more and more well developed in Saul. It was God's will to have David be anointed king, and through the instrumentality of Saul, Satan sought to destroy David. It's an old story. Christ was a prophet, and his message to the ecclesia was the same as Samuel's was to Saul. My thanks to Mark Sappington for pointing out that Christ, as well as being the Son of God and a prophet, he was also an apostle, for it tells us that in Hebrews 3:1. I'm just going to read that. You know, we get a little bit more of the fullness of the understanding of who or what roles and capacities God gave his Son. So in Hebrews 3:1, It says, therefore, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, that would be the ecclesia, consider the apostle and high priest of our confession. There was large as life. I've read it many times. Just the light never came on. The dots just didn't join. And I can't explain that. That's just how it works. Hopefully everybody else will be in a much greater capacity and a better place. I hadn't thought about it as I should have. So the similarities between Saul and us, the ecclesia, is very similar. He has God's spirit. A spirit of rebellion comes upon him. He's leading the nation. And he's against God all the time. There's a continual degradation, and I hadn't really thought of it in those terms. But again, if you look at the build-out of Satan's mind into Saul, when he turns away from God, the story becomes quite compelling. If we go to 1 Samuel 22, let's look at verses 11 through 19. So the king sent out to call Ahimelech, the priest, the son of Ahitub, maybe, and all his father's house, the priests who were in Nob, and they all came to the king. Saul said, "Here now, son of Ahitub." He answered, "Here I am, my lord." Then Saul said to him, "Why have you conspired against me and the son of Jesse, in that you have given him bread and a sword, and have inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait as it is to this day?" So Ahimelech answered the king and said, "Well, who among all your servants is as faithful as David, who is the king's son-in-law, who goes at your bidding, and is honorable at your house? Like, what's your point? Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Far be it from me. Let not the king impute anything to his servant or to any in the house of my father, for your servant knew nothing of all this, little or much." And the king said, "You shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's house." Then the king said to the guards who stood about him, "Turn and kill the priests of Jehovah." You can see Saul being hostile to the actual priests of Jehovah for simply doing their job. Because their hand is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not tell it to me. But the servants of the king would not lift their hands to strike the priests of Jehovah. And the king said to Doeg, "You turn and kill the priests." So Doeg the Edomite turned and struck the priest and killed on that day 85 men who wore a linen ephod. And also Nob, the city of the priests, he struck with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and nursing infants, oxen and donkeys and sheep, with the edge of the sword. You can see the depravity in him. And at the same time, did God allow his priest to be killed at the hand of this man? Yes, he did. Could he have stopped it? Without question. Did he? He did not. Would that be something that your God would do? Or not? Let's go on. Looking at Saul's descent into depravity as Satan's mind is developed in him. 1 Samuel 24, verses 1 and 2. "Now it happened, when Saul had returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, 'Well, take note, David's in the wilderness of En-Gedi.' Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men on the rocks of the wild goats." Still wants to kill him. Wants to take him out. 1 Samuel 26. Let's pick it up in verse 17, 1 Samuel 26 and verse 17. Then Saul knew David's voice and said, "Well, is that your voice, my son David?" And David said, "It is my voice, my lord, O king." And he said, "Why does my lord pursue his servant? For what have I done, or what evil is in my hand? Now therefore, please, let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. If Jehovah has stirred you up against me, let him accept an offering. But if it is the children of men, may they be accursed before Jehovah, for they have driven me out this day from sharing in the inheritance of Jehovah, saying, 'Go serve other gods.' So now do not let my blood fall to the earth before the face of Jehovah. For the king of Israel has come out to seek a flea, as when one hunts a partridge in the mountains." Then Saul said, "I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will harm you no more, because my life was precious in your eyes this day." Saul, David had spared him when he had a chance to kill him. "Indeed, I have played the fool and erred exceedingly." And David answered and said, "Here's the king's spear. Let one of the young men come over and get it. May Jehovah repay every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness, for Jehovah delivered you into my hand today. But I would not stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. And indeed, as your life was valued much this day in my eyes, so let my life be valued much in the eyes of Jehovah, and let him deliver me out of all tribulation." Then Saul said to David, "May you be blessed, my son David. You shall both do great things and also still prevail." So David went on his way, and Saul returned to his place. Let's go to verse chapter 28, and we'll read verses 3 through 20. So, now Samuel had died, and all Israel had lamented for him and buried him in Ramah in his own city. And Saul had put out the mediums and the spiritists out of the land, something he was supposed to do. Then the Philistines gathered together and came and encamped at Shunem. So Saul gathered all Israel together and they encamped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of Jehovah, Jehovah didn't answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by the prophets. You know, as a result of his own decision not wanting to keep God in his memory, when he got himself in deep, then he was certainly distressed. What did he then do? Saul said to his servants, "Find me a woman who is the medium." He knew that that was wrong. "That I may go to her and inquire her." And his servants said to him, "In fact, there's a woman who is the medium, or a witch, at Endor." So Paul disguised himself and put on other clothes. So we're adding deceit to another one of his character attributes. And he went and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night and said, "Please conduct a seance for me and bring up for me the one I shall name to you." Then the woman said to him, "Look, you know what Saul has done, how he's cut off the mediums and spiritists in the land. Why then do you lay a snare for my life to cause me to die?" And Saul swore to her by Jehovah, complete rebellion here, "As Jehovah lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing." You know, completely ignoring God's warning. Then the woman said, "Whom shall I bring up for you?" And he said, "Bring up Samuel for me." When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice, and the woman spoke to Saul, saying, "Why have you deceived me? Your soul!" And the king said to her, "Don't be afraid. What do you see?" And the woman said to Saul, "I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth, a demon spirit." So he said to her, "What's his form?" And she said, "Well, an old man is coming up, and he's covered with a mantle." And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed down before a deceiving spirit. What a change from bowing before Jehovah. And Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" And Saul answered, "I'm deeply distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and doesn't answer me anymore, neither by the prophets nor by dreams. There I've called you, that you may reveal to me what I should do. Ruling is a big responsibility. Samuel said, well, why do you ask me, seeing Jehovah has departed from you and has become your enemy? And Jehovah has done for himself as he spoke by me, for Jehovah has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David. Because you didn't obey the voice of the Lord, nor execute his fierce wrath upon you, Amalek, therefore Jehovah has done this thing to your day. Moreover, Jehovah will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me, as in dead. Jehovah will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Immediately Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid because of the words of Samuel, or the being that he thought was. And there was no strength in him, for he'd eaten no food day or night. So Saul's rebellion just continued to deepen. And ultimately, we see his demise in 1 Samuel 31, verses 1 through 6. Now the Philistines fought against Israel. The men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. Then the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons, and they killed Jonathan, Abinadab, and I don't know who, Saul's sons. The battle became fierce against Saul. The archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell on it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. So Saul, his three sons, his armor-bearer, and all his men died together in the same day. I went through that, and I'm afraid it's going to have to be a part 10, because the message is so profound when God reveals something by a prophet, as he did with Christ, to us. To walk away from that can bring very, very bad consequences. So we'll continue on with this in part 10 here. Shortly.